So this week and next week as well, we are continuing to work with this chapter on the past, really. We discussed this a little last week that I was wrong. I was thinking that we were going to get started on the following chapter in week six, and in some ways that had a nice feeling to it because the following chapter is about the future. And in a very very simplified way, you could say that the past is about being stuck. The past is about everything having already happened, right? Being stuck in that pastness and having no way out. So it can be a little discouraging to be working with the past, but it's important. It's the starting point. It's the place for inquiry, and that's what we're going to talk about today. And then the reading for next week is a little bit of a transition. There's a line in the reading for next week which says something like asking about the nature or structure of time is asking whether we're alive. And so the connection into our own aliveness, that becomes more available to us when we look at the future, and that's what we'll be looking at in the next program, starting, I think it starts at the beginning of February. But what we're doing in this program is, you could say, generally, we are exploring the structure of the time that we inhabit, and we're doing it in a way that already is a fundamental shift from our usual understanding. So the usual understanding is, time unfolds from moment to moment to moment, and we have been looking at a very different way of understanding time. But in this reading, the starting point anyway, and where I want to start today, is sort of working out the consequences of our usual understanding of time. So our usual understanding is that we're committed to identity, right? We affirm identity. And if you look back at the sentence right before the start of our reading for today, it points out the consequences of that and the flavor. If we really get serious about understanding how the past shapes our identity, or and the ongoing identities that give us our experience, if we get serious about that, we realize that we are giving up something very fundamental. So the sentence right before the reading says, not quite aware of what is ha not quite aware of what is happening, we affirm a world of no freedom and no choice, subverting our power to make of our lives what we wish. So we're giving up our freedom. That's discouraging, and it may not seem exactly right, because we all have this strong sense that we are free to choose. So in a certain sense, this is bumping up against the issue that gets discussed in philosophy about free will, right? How can we say that we have free will when it seems that everything has been determined by the past? And that really is, in some ways, the issue that we've been exploring. Here we are, everything is determined, or to use the language of this chapter, everything is identified. Everything is given its identity in advance. And so we are always emerging into a world where everything has been set up and everything has been structured. And I think that's why Rinpoche says that's a world where there's no freedom and no choice and no ability to turn our lives in the direction we would wish. And even though we may experience a kind of a continuum, times when it seems like we're just operating on automatic pilot, and times when it seems that we really are making fundamental choices or taking responsibility or striking out in new directions, that may be true. I'm not saying that it's all total slavery all the time, but the underlying thrust, and especially based on our way of understanding time, the underlying thrust is to turn away from freedom. And when we claim that we are free, we may be connecting in with something that's very important, but we may also be, manufacturing a sense of freedom, which is not the same thing as experiencing freedom, in and of itself. So we are in this moment in this exploration of time, where we really are looking at the consequences of our usual understanding, which centers on identity, and it's a little bit discouraging. As the text says at a certain point, I don't have it right in front of me, although it will come up. I think it's on page 88, but I'm not sure. Anyway, well, I guess actually, I'm sorry. What I read you before is in our reading. My mistake. I forgot the reading starts on page 85. So that sentence I read you about giving up or affirming a world of no freedom. That's part of our reading. Okay, well, so the passage that I was going to look for, a little bit going out of sequence here, but the idea is that we can look at our conditioning, but usually we don't. Oh, here it is. It's at the top of page 86. So it's talking about this identity-centered view. So let's look at that first paragraph. Born into an identity that we grow into over time. So the identity is there, you could say, before we are. Growing up is learning to put on our identity. And if you think about, some of you have children, some of you have interacted with children, all of us have interacted with children. But if you think about what it means for a baby to grow up, it's basically being educated in who he or she, who or she, who the baby is. It's being educated in the identity. So born into an identity that we grow into over time. At the outset, we are ignorant of how our possibilities have been predetermined. So we are predetermination, of course, is a word that comes up in this free will discussion all the time. Everything has been set up. It's all about the pre-existing identities. So we are ignorant of how our possibilities have been predetermined. As our lives unfold, we gradually overcome this ignorance. That is, really, it's not that we now gain knowledge that we can apply. It's more that we learn who we are. We learn to accept the identities, not only our identity, but the identity of the world that we've been born into. And the sentence I really wanted to point to is he says, our conditioning is there to see if we wish. But most often we turn away, for it is not a truth we are eager to acknowledge. So that's where we are. That's the reason I'm kind of emphasizing this is because it may seem a little discouraging. It's all about how everything has already happened. We're stuck in a world that's been set up for us in advance. We give up our freedom. We give up our choice. We can't do what we can't really change our lives in a fundamental way. All of that, of course, is based on the usual model. And we are challenging that model. But part of the challenge is to recognize those structures in operation. And so, if you find yourself wishing we could do it differently, well, you have to be a little bit patient. We will do an exercise during the phone call today where we can at least maybe touch on that. But you need to understand the truth of this pre-existing identity world this truth of a pastness world, this truth of a world where everything has already happened, which means there's it's beyond all possibility of change. So I have my own video up on the center of my screen here, and I say those things and I smile broadly, and that's nice because I think it's good to be friendly. But there's if we could find some inner video to broadcast, it would be the video of someone, Jack or someone else, deeply saddened by the way in which we've, you might say, bargained away our freedom. It's not easy. It's not easy to acknowledge. It's not a truth, as the text says, that we're eager to acknowledge. But it's also not the final truth. It's not even, ultimately, it's not even true, or how can we say that? Ultimately, it's only based on the fact that we've made certain assumptions about time and space and knowledge. So that's what we're exploring. Okay. Now, first of all, when we talk about identity, it's an identity, it's our identity, and it's the identity of the world around us. It's in every moment, you could say, something is going on. There's a what. We say, what's going on? What's happening? And that what is a kind of cover term, a general term, for the identity of what of that situation, of wherever we find ourselves. And that identity is the identity of the things we encounter. It's our own identity. It's the identity of the concerns and worries and emotions that we have. All of that makes up the what. And Rinpoche uses this very powerful image, really, I think, of being on the edge of a cliff. There's been a lot of talk about cliffs, at least in this country lately. So we're on the edge of a cliff on a dark and moonless night, and we're making our way along, and we concentrate on each step at a time, and that leads to a certain deception. The deception is that, we think, well, there's only this step right now, but in fact, the path has been laid down in advance, and we're relying on that path. And that is the what of the situation we find ourselves in. It's the identity of that situation. Now, if you see the wholeness of that, if you see that there's a structure, an identity that includes the past and includes the future in the same way that the path along the edge of the cliff, has its beginning and its ending, and we're relying on that structure. If we could engage that as something that is always being presented, in other words, not as something that's already happened, but something that is emerging in each moment, that quality of emergence is central, especially when we talk about time. In one of the other TSK books, Rinpoche talks about the ongoing emergency. And I always have liked that phrase. It's at the end of Knowledge of Time and Space, because emergency has the right quality of a dynamic. But it doesn't mean, oh, terrible, terrible. It just means there's an ongoing emergence, an emergency. And if we could tune into that, and that's much more related to the future tense, the not the pastness, but the possibilities of the future that we're going to be exploring next session. But if we could see the whole in light of that always new emerging, that would change things dramatically. And that's where we're heading. But first we need to get clear on pastness and identity. So we talked about this for those of you who were in last year's program. We talked about this when we talked about the field communique, the main discussion of that is in, I think, the second chapter of Dynamics. It's in the space section. So I'm going to read you a line from that on page 17. It says, "This then is the ongoing meaning that the communique, the field communique, expresses. The whole sustains the identity of each particular part, while each part in turn confirms the manifested whole." And that way of saying it is very consistent with the point that everything has been identified in advance. That's the whole. That's the what of what's happening that we are always emerging into and or emerging out of. You could think of it either way. The dynamic is in the emerging, but you could say we emerge out of something that is already established. That's the past. And we emerge into what has been established. Which is the pastness of the present, you could say. Everything is there, everything is set up. I feel like I'm probably belaboring this point. It's just, you know, it's the very opposite of freedom. Everything is predetermined. And what we would like to be able to do is look at the emerging, look at the dynamic. And I want to read you another line. This was from that short story by Italo Calvino that I included in the orientation. He's talking about the city having been shaped by everything that's gone before, you know. And he says, "As this wave from memories flows in, the city soaks it up like a sponge and expands." And really what we're saying, what I'm saying, is that we'd like to be able to look at verbs instead of nouns, you know. So I've talked about emerging. Here we have expanding, and we also have soaking up, I suppose. It's when you engage that dynamic, things look different. So Michael asks a question here. How is the path that guides us different from the happened? The whole doesn't seem like a path, more an infinite, undefined realm of possibility. Yes, well, there's two ways of thinking about paths, you know. There is a pre-existing path. So here you are on the edge of the cliff, and other people who have gone that way before have created a path, and you are very carefully following that path because it will keep you safe. It will keep you from going over the cliff. That is, you could say, the happened. You know, that's what's already there, and we're relying on it because, you could say, because the path is given in the same way that the cliff and the fall down the cliff is given. You know, given that reality that we find ourselves on the edge of a cliff and that a fall would be fatal, presumably, then we have to hold on to the path. We have to follow that. All that has been set up. That's the identity of the situation. That's the what of what's happening. There's another way of thinking about paths, and that is, it's nicely put by a Western thinker. He says, "You lay down a path in walking." So you make your own path. And that's more what you're pointing to, it seems to me. The whole doesn't seem like a path. It's an infinite, undefined realm of possibility. So, yes, with every step in this realm of possibility, you are creating a path. So we have, you know, we have emerging, we have expanding, we have creating. When we're in that dynamic mode, that's the possibility of freedom. And that is really what we want to explore. And that leads us naturally into a consideration of the future. But as long as we're focused on the path, on what has been laid down, on what pre-exists, the world that we're born into, or the identity that we're born into and that we grow into, That is not a realm, an infinite, undefined realm of possibility. So I don't disagree with you, and that is where we're headed. But we need to acknowledge that that's not where we are most of the time, and we need to get more clear about the structure of that pre-established pastness. So this is a great time to explore, can we do it differently? So we create the path in walking on it, or in walking it. We let the, to use the Calvino quote, we allow the past what does he say, as it flows in, we allow it to lead us into expanding. So emerging, expanding, creating that dynamic flow. Let's take a couple of minutes and see if we can work with that. So in any given moment, and the structure of moments we'll have to look at more carefully, but right now, let's not worry about one moment after another. Let's just say right now, there is a situation which can expand in an unanticipated direction. We can just forget about our usual commitment to the past and the identities, or at least that's the practice. Maybe it turns out, it's not so easy to do, but we can experiment with that. Instead of just sliding, you could say, sort of without thinking about it too much, sliding into the world that's been laid out for us, the identity that just growing into that identity, taking it on with each new moment. As a moment comes up, as our experience comes up, and it's always there, experience is always there, we can let it expand. We can let the possibilities expand with in no determined, happened way. So that's the alternative. Let's try it. Let's try it for a couple of minutes, and then people can see what's going on. I see there's a question from Brigitte, but we'll look at that after we've done the practice. So for a couple of minutes now, allowing the possibilities of this present experience to expand in a creative way as the alternative to pastness. Let's try that and see how it goes. Okay. So why don't you share some thoughts or some descriptions or reflections based on that experience? If anybody wants to speak up, please do. But in the meantime, I'm expecting things will show up in the chat box. In the meantime, I'm going to look at what Brigitte wrote, which is very much related to what we were just doing. So Brigitte writes, "What's guiding us?" So here we are on this path. So what's guiding us? Could it, in the best possible way, be the future? And I think that's exactly the line that we're exploring and moving towards, but we don't want to try to do it without engaging the reality of the past. That's really the point that I've been trying to make today. Yeah, the future is the realm of possibility, right? It can guide us. So the future is not just this big fog that's completely blank. The past, you could say the lineage of the past, and we'll talk about that some more. The lineage of the past expands. That's really what the quote from Calvino says. The city, let's say the reality of this moment, absorbs the lineage of the past or the multiple lineages of the past like a sponge, and it expands. And that expanding we could think of as the future.
I had an idea.
Okay, Michael?
It's hard to know the future, but I was thinking like how boats do sonic probing to determine how deep the ocean is underneath. Maybe we can relate to the future in that way as a kind of like that practice of being aware of our own death is kind of like sending out a message from the present and having it bounce off a wall of unknown depth and coming back to us. And then if that wakes us up and makes us value the present more, that's kind of using the future as a kind of ocean that surrounds us. And we don't know how far the shore away, the bottom is.
Right. Well, that's interesting. I haven't thought about it that way. One of the things, of course, we've been looking at is this structure of past, present, and future, and how that's really operating in every moment. So you could say that typically the way it's operating has to do with identity. We engage the future in a way in which it's already known in advance. And you're suggesting something very different. You're suggesting the possibility, yes, we know about our death, which is important. That's the part I'm not going to try to bring that in because I just haven't thought about it enough. But the possibility of sounding, yeah, who's trying to speak up there?
Sorry, Jack, it's Caroline.
Yeah.
Was Michael saying aware of our own depth or our own death?
I think you were saying death, DEATH, right, Michael?
Yes, that our life will one day end. We don't know when.
Right.
Right. So it's indeterminate. So people often point out, I mean, this issue of our own death is that's a big deal. So I don't want to try to just jump right into it, but one thing that people often point out is that it's If you could think of your death as something that will happen at some point off in the future, and you don't know exactly when it is, or you could think of your death as something that really helps shape every moment. That's more the wholeness aspect, and that sonic probe that Michael was using as an image, that would sort of carry its own weight, carry its own intensity at every moment. Okay,
Can
well,
I elaborate?
sure.
if like, there's another practice where you look ahead 5 years and try and look back and say, what would I be happy to have been? That's a less charged idea of exploring the unknown realm of time in the future direction. And like bouncing off, like awareness travels out, tries to stop at some point in the future and look back, and then comes back with a message about how our lives are meaningful, how time is not a straight line, but something more spherical. Or, but I didn't mean to get, I'm just thinking that it's a way of probing the future without claiming that we know what it's going to bring.
Because, of course, our death is, as the texts are always pointing out, the time of our death certainly, and everything else about it really is unknown. So it's a way of kind of engaging the future without turning it into a known, without giving it an identity, recognizing the unknown dimension of it. Okay, well, that's interesting. Maybe I'll try to say a little bit more about that in the orientation. Okay. Let's look at what a couple of other people have said here, because we have some comments. So, Caroline, you were saying the exercise felt like opening to listen to something which I don't usually hear. Yeah. Yeah, this notion, one way to think about expanding, it seems to me, and this relates to that Calvino story, is the difference between a linear time and lineage, even though the words are very closely connected. Linear time seems to say, one moment, one moment, one moment, one moment. But lineage is the kind of meaningfulness of what has come before. At any given moment, there's a lineage of that moment. It's related to the idea of past, present, and future of each moment. And expanding into the future is in a way listening for the lineage. Maybe that doesn't strike everybody as right, and I'm not sure about it. I'm just thinking that there's something there. But I like the idea of listening to something that I don't usually hear, or don't usually even listen for, right? Like there's a different dimension. Does that seem fair, Caroline?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Brigitte writes about the expanding helped as an antidote of being pulled down the same old ways, felt obligations. Yeah, absolutely. When we are committed to the identities of the past, to the pastness and happenedness, I'm trying to bring it back to the terms that are in this chapter. When we're committed to that, we get caught up in a very emotionally driven way of being. So there's a description of that on the top of page 87. Rinpoche says, as we affirm identity, we readily take on old patterns. And that's what Brigitte's referring to, I think, right? The same old ways. We readily take on old patterns collected and transmitted down to us. Our thoughts and sense experience, our emotions and moods combine and edit these previous patternings to fit the present situation. Ideas and concepts and identities first formulated in other eras or circumstances shape our own interpretations, even our own feelings. Very little in our lives cannot be traced through such a lineage of characteristics or qualities or events. Now, the word lineage here, I think, is being used as a kind of a limiting factor. It's like all these things have shaped and determined what's available to us right now. The way that we've been talking about lineage in the last week or two is more the kind of weightiness of the lineage or the meaningfulness of the lineage as an antidote to the notion that the past is just this accumulation of one moment after another, and the increasing weightiness of that accumulation, which just, ties us up like ropes binding us, you could say. Lineage doesn't have to be like that. So the word lineage can play out in a lot of different ways. But freeing, being freed, you use the word Brigitte, an antidote to being pulled down by the same old ways. So the expanding into the possibilities that are given by the lineage of the past, that's where we're headed. See what David says here. Oh, we have several people here, several things. Okay. So David says, watching traffic in the distance. Most cars going to the right, north, but then one heads south, contrary to the flow, but still on the beaten path, so to speak. So yes, roads and highways are the absolute spatial equivalent of the usual, linear notion of time, aren't they? Okay. I imagine traveling off-road, walking in the field in the distance, observing the low growth, feeling the chill in the air, seeing overcast sky with no particular goal. Mental experience seems to become more spacious. Yeah, thank you. That's a very nice image for what it would be to expand and to go off that path. Yes. Okay. And Bruce says, the exercise brought home the wisdom of speaking in terms of identity to describe our inherited or determined way of being. Moving toward open possibility felt like letting go of identification. Now you typed indentification, which I've always thought was an interesting word. I mistype it too, but you probably meant identification. If not, let us know. Indentification somehow suggests something there. Anyway, felt like letting go of identification with the lineages of each aspect. Yes, it's a typo. Okay. Felt like letting go of identification with the lineages of each aspect of experience, the many echoes of association, in order to loosen the hypnotic power of past prehensions. So prehension is a term that sometimes gets used technically. It has to do with grabbing, grasping, like apprehending, right? The power of past prehensions, and to sense the newness that also limns each moment. So the possibility for newness is there in each moment, and this open possibility, this expanding and letting go of lineage in the sense that the text uses it here, the lineage of what ties us down, instead of kind of engaging the lineage as an opportunity for other possibilities. Okay, well, that's exactly where I think this exercise leads us. It's not as though identity and pastness and are the only way in which we can be. But if I were going to sum up, because it's definitely time to end now. If I were going to sum up, it's that as long as we're committed to our usual understanding of time, and you might say this kind of limited sense of lineage that we've been talking about too, as long as we're committed to that, it's very hard to imagine how you could move beyond it. That doesn't mean we don't move beyond it. There are times when the past loses its hold and new opportunities open up. But those seem to be almost well beyond our control, let's say. Sometimes things go that way and we say, well, that was very nice. But we don't understand how that process works. And it's partly because the only way we have of thinking about new possibilities is in terms of this pastness structure of identities. So what we want to do instead is look at our conditioning, to go back to that line from the top of page 86. Our conditioning is there to see if we wish, but most often we turn away. We want to not turn away. And one way to do that is to look in terms of lineage, which automatically, it seems to me, opens up new possibilities. And the other way we've been looking at is to discover this past, present, future structure within each moment. And one reason it seems to me that's so important is because we're committed to past, present, future in a linear sense. We think of, that was the past and the future is coming up and here we are in this moment. As long as we're committed to that, then we're committed to the idea that time is one moment after another. And it all happens too quickly. It's just like it's this onrush of experience, and we don't know what to do with it. We can't do anything with it. It's already too late. The moment's already gone. The next moment's already here. And looking at the past, present, future structure within each moment begins to suggest that moments don't necessarily succeed each other in that way. Our lives are not linear. And there's a lot to be said about that, but I don't think we can say it right now. What we're going to be looking at is how we can let time become the solvent, you might say, that dissolves the sense of let's see, on page 87, Rinpoche talks about an increasing dimensionalization, right? He says, the past accumulates, this is the first full paragraph, the past accumulates layer by layer, there's an ever stronger pressure, patterns continue to operate, they increase in density and quantity until there's really a shift, there's an increasing dimensionalization and a multiple pronouncing, this is the kind of language Rinpoche likes to use here. It's all ways of talking about being ever more stuck. And it has to do with this accumulating weight of time from moment to moment to moment, from layer to layer to layer. And that's what we want to investigate. So we have these two things we've been talking about as alternatives, opening up alternatives, the past, present, future structure, and lineage in this more felt sense. And then underlying that, there's also this sense of expansion, right? Of expanding, emerging, creating, not the content of what's going on, not the what of what's happening, but the dynamic of the arising of this moment. It's tempting to say of the next moment, and that's kind of true, but now we're committing ourselves to the same old understanding of time, one moment at a time. So we'll have to look at that. And the reading for next week is going to be a transition, I think, into a focus on a very different way of engaging. Okay, let's stop there.